Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Brian Alvarez After Dark here at brianalvarez.com. We've got a very exciting show in store for you today. This is the first program where we're going to be talking about a subject that I really don't know an awful lot about. We're going to be joined in about a half hour by Kevin Wallace, who's going to be discussing a couple of different subjects today, including the Illuminati. We've actually gotten several emails, a lot of people sent in questions asking about the Illuminati, and it's certainly not my area of expertise. I know very little about it, but we're going to talk to Kevin about that today, and also the proposed mysteries of Occult Disney. Yes, Occult Disney. So it should be a fun show today. We're joined for the news section, as we are every week, by Carl Stern. And Carl, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brian. Very busy, good active week, and but pretty much doing good.
Now, I, as just mentioned, know very little about the Illuminati. Somebody emailed us last week and asked about a series of books, wondering whether either of us had read them, and I had not, and you had not read them either. Someone had recommended them to you, and you got through a little of it and kind of gave up. But as far as like the Illuminati conspiracy in general, the idea that there is a shadow group, a shadow government perhaps, that is, I guess their goal is to run the world. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, this has come up, and really it is the backbone and kind of basis of a lot of different conspiracy theories, in that this shadow group of world leaders and future world leaders gather together at various locations throughout the world to plot what happens next and to determine what governments stand and fail and who leads them, and that it's all predetermined, I guess, is the ultimate idea behind the Illuminati. And supposedly the Illuminati dates back into the far reaches of antiquity. Some people have tied even the Knights Templar into it, and the Holy Grail and all that. Of course, that brings in Freemasonry and all that good stuff, supposedly in some way, shape, or form ties ultimately into the Illuminati. The Illuminati, in some explanations, is really like the ultimate top-tier, very ultimate level of the Freemason type society, and you know, it's just one of those things. I'm sure you've heard of the Bilderberg Group and things like that. All that is tied into the Illuminati conspiracy, supposedly. Skull and Bones. You know, we've all heard the different things that may or may not weave into the Illuminati conspiracy. Now, the books you mentioned, again, they just lost my interest in there, but. The idea of a shadow group, certainly I think there has been evidence at times that it's a possibility. I don't necessarily believe that such a said group exists in the way that the conspiracy theorists believe it might, but certainly throughout history there has been some evidence, I think, that groups of powerful people have met secretively to determine the course of major events, even of course in especially in far back times, even the Pope was said to be involved in this and things of that nature. So I don't know. I think a lot of this is very secretive meetings that have a lot of things attached to them that may not necessarily be. Certainly, anytime you have very powerful people together meeting at secret locations where there's no media access, no open meetings and things like that, it opens the door for all kinds of speculation and so forth. So to me, the jury is out on the Illuminati, and I'll be very interested in hearing what your guest has to say.
Yeah, we talked last week about the Brad Meltzer Decoded show that did a program on Bohemian Grove, and obviously, when they talk to the locals about Bohemian Grove, you know, some people thought that this was you know, essentially what you're talking about. They're a group of people meeting to control the world and this and that. And the conclusion that Brad Meltzer's group came up with was essentially seems to be largely just a good old boys club, a fraternity, a glorified, I guess glorified probably isn't the proper word, but like, you know, a super high-end fraternity. And That was sort of the impression that I got as well from watching the program. And obviously, I suppose that's the direction they would want to steer you in. But I guess we'll talk to Kevin today about his thoughts on Bohemian Grove and whether he believes that there actually is a secret government. I mean, I always kind of look at government in general, and, you know, this is not even really a political statement here, because I actually have a couple of friends that work in various levels of government, and I go to the post office all the time, for example. And, I mean, suffice to say, I don't think anyone's going to argue there's a high level of incompetence in the government. You know, the idea that there's a super secret, like a higher level of government that does not involve incompetence, I guess. I don't know. I sort of find that hard to believe, but I guess we'll find out more here today. I wanted to talk, obviously, one of the big stories of the last couple of days, the Watson supercomputer that beat two humans at Jeopardy. I presume you watched those episodes?
Yeah, I caught part of them, mostly just the clips of various segments of the show. I didn't watch the entire programming, although I did find The Daily Show with Jon Stewart had a tremendous piece on it last night. So if you haven't got to see that, I'd highly recommend that. What do you expect? you're playing against a supercomputer. Of course it's going to win. Of course it's going to defeat people. But what people fail to realize is that without us building computers to begin with, they can't defeat us. So, you know, it's kind of chicken and egg thing there. Are the computers going to take over and replace people? Well, they have in a lot of ways. You know, they build our cars for us now. They, have laid off many, many thousands of people with, you know, new automated machines and so forth. And, of course, they're smarter than us. And I guess if, you know, the future of the world comes down depending on humans versus computers in Jeopardy or chess, I guess we are at a loss. But, you know, we have to build these things, and without a human to program said computer, at least at this stage in evolution, I think we still win.
When we did the show about the singularity several weeks ago with Steve Sims, we were talking about Ray Kurzweil and his idea of the singularity. And actually, there have been, you know, Time Magazine, I think the headline story this week was The singularity, yeah. And several articles, they're all up on BrianAlvarez.com right now. You can go back and check them out. But the point is, he sees things in improving exponentially to the point where I think by 2029, he believed that machine intelligence, like computer intelligence, would be indistinguishable from human intelligence. Maybe it was 2045. I can't remember. 2045 is a singularity, and I think that's man melding with machine, I believe, is that date. But
right. Regardless,
when you know, obviously, you know, first we had the computer beating the man at chess. Now we've got the computer beating men at Jeopardy. And when I heard about this before I'd seen it, I thought, wow, that is a huge step forward. This is history. You know, someday I'm going to be telling my kids about the time I saw the computer beat the dudes on Jeopardy. But then when I watched the show, it really struck me that this computer is so far away from displaying human intelligence that, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a computer scientist. I'm not Ray Kurzweil or anything like that. But to me, I mean, I looked at the computer beating the men on Jeopardy the way I look at, for example, my calculator. I'm not very good at math. And I accept that my calculator is much more intelligent than I am in terms of addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. You know, I can type in, say, you know, 98 times 52, and it'll tell me 5,096 immediately. And, you know, I take hours to do that math on my own. But to me, this computer that beat the men at Jeopardy, it just seemed like a glorified calculator. You know?
Exactly. I mean, there's no difference than if you and I have a trivia contest over the telephone, but I have to depend on my brain and you get to use Wikipedia. Odds are you're going to defeat me handily. Now, the thing that people don't take into consideration when it comes to new technology is if you go back to the 1930s and 40s and pick up the popular science magazines of the time and so forth, we should be in flying cars right now and doing teleportation back and forth between places. You don't know where technology is heading because you don't know what's going to become important to people. If you think back to 1969, okay, that was 2 years before I was even born. We were going to the moon. We were readily going out into outer space. Things were really heading out in the world. Who would have, you know, so it looked like we were on target to do that sort of thing, to have flying rocket cars by the year, you know, 2011 and stuff. And instead, we've got iPods the size of a postage stamp. You know, things are getting smaller and more compact, and being able to process great amounts of information, not so much replacing intelligence as it is largely entertainment. I mean, if you think in the terms of scientific exploration that involves technology, and I know we've done a lot of scientific things, especially biologically speaking, but in terms of things we've actually put great technology to, we've retrograded, if anything. I mean, we're still sending 1970s technology, for a short period of time anyway, in the space shuttle up into space. We haven't advanced at all. If anything, we've gone a little backwards, or definitely flatlined there. So technology took a whole different route. We've got plasma screen TVs now. We've got Internet, which is the biggest thing our generation, I think, as far as technology goes, will be credited for. Things are getting smaller and smaller and faster, and not necessarily smarter and greater. And so we don't know where technology goes next. It's going to be whatever is important to the generation that's in high school right now. Whatever they deem we need technology for in the next 20 to 30 years, that's what it'll be, and not necessarily machines walking around making decisions for us.
Well, I do know, I actually do know where technology is going, and I'm very confident in this. It is going exactly where you just suggested, smaller and faster. When I watched that game, the key to me that they mentioned briefly was that, okay, they had two guys, you know, one guy on the left and one guy on the right, and the computer was in the middle, and what they had was a screen, like a screen the size of a flat screen computer monitor turned sideways. You know, it was about the same height as the men, but that was not the actual computer. The actual computer was housed, I believe, at IBM. It was really big. And if you look back to, I mean, let's go back to 1969, and let's say that we had to create a computer that was as intelligent as the computer that won on Jeopardy. You know, everyone always talks about how computers used to be the size of a room or a building. And, you know, they went from the size of a building to the size of a room to a desktop computer. Now we've got computers in our phone. But anyway, the computer that won at Jeopardy was much, much larger than the one that they showed on television. Now, in 10 years, I think that the computer that beats the men at Jeopardy may be the size of a phone. Now, as far as will a computer the size of the phone or even a computer the size of a building be intelligent? I don't know, because I don't know. I watched that show, and they asked, you know, what would you like to bet on the Daily Double? And the computer was just like, $2,146. And Alex Trebek is just like, what a weird number. And, you know, there was seemingly no rhyme or reason to that number. And the computer doesn't understand humor or comedy. You know, I can't give all of the questions here off the top of my head, but, you know, there were certain questions that the computer was obviously going to get immediately, you know, basic facts.
Well, then again, too, it did determine that Toronto was apparently in the United States.
Exactly.
Also.
Exactly. The questions that were more circuitous, that were not just simply facts that you could program into a computer, that you actually had to, you know, you had to do a certain level of thinking, perhaps puns were involved, you know, those were the ones that the computer had a real hard time with. And I just look at it like, okay, if Ray Kurzweil thinks that we're going to have intelligent computers by 2029, that's all fine and good if we understand the human brain and are attempting to design a computer to recreate the actions of the brain. We don't even understand the brain yet. So, you know, technology can advance all it wants, but if we don't even understand the brain, how can we even program a computer to simulate the brain? I don't see how this is possible.
Well, if it's any great comfort to humanity, I regularly defeat the Jeopardy app on my iPad, so apparently I win versus the Apple computer anyway.
Well,
I'm thus far undefeated. So.
5 years, that may change, Carl.
That's very possible. But, you know, I do think one of the things where we are headed with computing and intelligence, it's not going to be computers achieving artificial intelligence in and of themselves, but I do see computers feeding us intelligence at a much faster rate. You know, one of the big things that became very in vogue a couple years ago, although it seems to have really backed off, was the Bluetooth technology, where you put this little earpiece on your ear and walked around, looked like you were talking to yourself all the time. Well, while that didn't necessarily catch on, as it was kind of a fad for a little while, and I still see some dorks that still use this, but I see something along those lines that you can use, but not just for communicating with other people, but for asking a question. You're walking down the street and you need to know where something is. You can ask, and remotely it feeds you the information, GPS stuff, or come across a question. Say you're an engineer working in a factory or something. You need to know complicated mathematics. You can speak this out, and your little headset deal feeds it to a computer and gives you the answer back. Now, I see that being a way to integrate in artificial intelligence into people without, you know, this singularity and things like that coming to pass. If anything, I think we're headed more that direction.
Huge solar flare. I guess we're approaching a solar maximum, I believe, in 2012, ironically. And I guess radio communications were disrupted. The electrical grid in some places was disrupted. And this was a massive flare. And, of course, there's been a lot of concern that like a really massive major flare could do serious damage to the infrastructure on Earth, and you know, some of the worst case scenarios are, you know, it would take years to repair this damage, and you know, real legitimate disaster scenarios some people have come up with. This was a pretty big flare. There were some problems. Didn't wipe out the entire Earth. I guess what are your thoughts on did we dodge a bullet here? Is doom coming? And what do we do to remedy this situation?
Well, I had always wondered about the alarm factor for these space weather events and so forth, especially solar. You know, we've been in like a decade long solar minimum where there's been very little solar activity, and now it seems to be back on the upswing, and these things are do come in cycles. But I've seen recently a lot of conflicting information on that, where I don't know the answer to this, but I've saw a couple of shows here recently where scientists say that these solar flares and so forth are vastly overrated as far as the damage they can do to communications and satellites and the power grid and things like that. That a lot of that stuff may, in fact, be overplayed. In fact, I saw one scientist on a news show this past week say essentially that, you know, the most monumental solar flare that is what you could reasonably expect to happen in, 1,000-year period, the worst-case scenario is that it may disrupt temporarily some communication, but you would get very brilliant auroras would be about the biggest thing we would see here on Earth from that. So it does seem like maybe there's a lot of alarmist talk involved in these solar incidents. So I don't really know what to make of it. It seems like there's a lot of conflicting information out there.
When we talk about 2012, we've actually never done a show on 2012. So perhaps we'll have to at some point before the world ends, of course. But it was interesting. A couple of days ago, there were a few stories about the possibility of a new planet, perhaps on the verge of being discovered. There are a couple of articles up on BrianAlvarez.com. I'll read part of one of the stories here. Scientists believe they may have found a new planet in the far reaches of the solar system, up to four times the mass of Jupiter. Its orbit would be thousands of times farther from the sun than the Earth's, which could explain why it has so far remained undiscovered. Data which could prove the existence of Teich, I guess they're calling it. Teich. A gas giant in the Oort cloud is set to be released later this year, although some believe proof has already been garnered by NASA with its PACE telescope, and is waiting to be poured over. Now, couple of days later, another story came out which said a duo of planetary astronomers has grabbed media attention by claiming a planet four times the size of Jupiter may be lurking in the outer solar system. They call the planet Teich. Many astronomers, however, say it probably isn't there. The claim by... actually, there's another guy here that says there's evidence that some Oort cloud comets display orbital peculiarities. We're saying that perhaps the pattern is indicative that there is a planet there. And not everyone is optimistic, this article says. And just very interesting because for those of you that have followed the writers, the writings of Zachariah Sitchin in his book about the 12th planet and Planet X, this planet with an extremely long orbit, I think he had... It was 4,800 years or something like that. This was obviously very interesting, this news.
Yes, I love astronomy, first off. I absolutely one of my favorite scientific fields to read about, anything to do with astronomy. And as you pointed out, you brought up the Zachariah Sitchin stuff. I've read all those, the Earth Chronicles and, of course, the 12th Planet and things like that, and... adding to that, the ancient knowledge stuff, which is also a particular interest of mine, this may have been something they already knew at one point in time, and we lost knowledge of it. I certainly, again, this is not something new. These astronomers actually came out with this theory several years ago, and for whatever reason, it's now getting some mainstream publicity. But... you know, it's always been one of those things that people in the mainstream don't understand. They think of things like the Hubble telescope, and we're out there seeing, you know, the oldest galaxies ever formed. And so they just assume that, you know, we know everything relatively close to us, when, in fact, that is not the case at all. Space is enormous. Some speculate it could be infinite. And the Hubble telescope only sees where you point it. And if we've not known where to... point our instruments, there could very well be a giant lurking out there in the darkness of space, especially that as far out as they are postulating that this thing could be. And I find it very interesting. I absolutely believe that it is very possible that an undiscovered planet could be lurking in our very own solar system out in the far reaches of it. And with a peculiar enough orbit and a large enough orbit, well, we may not have seen that evidence of it in several lifetimes, so several generations. In fact, when you get into some of Graham Hancock and Zachariah Sitchin's ideas, it could be you know, tens of thousands of years in cycles before we know this stuff. So I'm interested to see where this goes. I think it's very, very possible. I don't know that there is, and neither is anybody else, but... they seem to think, now that people are looking, I think we'll know the answer within a couple years anyway.
It was the 12th planet was the name of the book. Nibiru would have been number 12, and 3,600-year orbit. And I believe that Sitchin, I guess the 12 planets would have been the 9, at least the original 9. It's now 8, but we'll get into that in a second. But the 9 planets, and I guess they counted the sun and the moon as well, and that would have been 11. And then the 12th would have been Nibiru. The problem is that now scientists are only recognizing 8 planets. Pluto has been downgraded, which was... you know, for guys
which the thing about that, the way he comes up with that number is what the ancients used in their archaeology and in their writings, how they recognized different astronomical alignments. And so it's not necessarily what we think of today, it's what they were using at the time to build their monuments and to point certain things at certain places. That's where he's coming up with that. Number. There does seem to be some suggestions that they were looking for something else that we haven't yet found.
Well, I guess we'll see if we do in fact have yet another planet in the solar system with a very wide orbit. And you know, obviously if it turned out we did and the orbit was 3,600 years, that would certainly have people talking here in 2011.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. And again, too, you know, who knows, when you get into these gas giants and stuff, you know, there's a lot of speculation about what to even call these things once it gets, you know, full four times the size of Jupiter as a gas giant. That's not even, I don't even know that that fits the criteria of a planet. It comes closer to some sort of star or something. I don't even know.
Got a couple of questions here. You can always send questions to the show, by the way, by emailing BrianAlvarezAfterDark@gmail.com. That's BrianAlvarezAfterDark@gmail.com. This person here wants to know, what are your thoughts on the Loch Ness Monster?
I think probably there has been something there. I don't know that it's still there, but I find it totally plausible that some sort of, especially when you get underwater, some sort of ancient leviathan could exist. A lot of the Loch Ness stuff, I think, was probably hoaxed, but certainly it's absolutely plausible that some sort of underwater creature that size could exist and be trapped in a lock in somewhere.
I think if anything existed in the lock, it's probably dead, and I don't even know if anything exists. I mean, they've done so many, I guess, however they're doing it nowadays in terms of scouring the lock, sonar, satellite, you know, and there's nothing. They found nothing in there, and if there's a giant, a plesiosaur, whatever the idea is, I mean, I would think by now, you know, it would have been found. So as far as, like, in the past, I don't know. You know, it is interesting. They're obviously, you know, you can go back hundreds and hundreds of years and there are sightings of things in the lock. And perhaps at some point there was something there. Perhaps, you know, I have not read about the Loch Ness Monster in many, many years. But, you know, apparently there was I guess it's in close enough proximity to the sea that something could have been trapped in there long, long ago. And survived. I don't know, but I look at the available evidence nowadays, and all of the work they've done to scour that lock, and they've just not seen anything. And so, you know, I can't believe there's anything large living in there today.
Yeah, that's kind of my thoughts too. If there was something, it's probably not there anymore.
And he also wants to know, what are your thoughts on the TV series Ghost Hunters? Do you think their findings are legit, or is the show a work?
Oh, I think the show's a work. I mean, just I think it's entertainment, and that's about it. I'm not real impressed with Ghost Hunters and their questionable equipment.
I've never been much into the whole ghost hunting thing. Ghosts in general, I mean, it's fun. We did a whole show on hauntings and such, and you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's a lot of strange things in this world, and, you know, I'm sure that in some of these places, really strange things happen. Are they dead spirits? I don't know. I don't know. I would think there's probably something going on, but I don't know what that is. And a lot of the Ghost Hunters shows, you know, photographs of weird, you know, lots of things show up on photographs, and that doesn't necessarily mean, especially when I read that, you know, so-and-so took a photo and there's a weird thing there, but it wasn't there when he took the photo. Well, that sort of tells me something. It was not there when he took the photo, but it's there on the photo. It suggests there might be a photography problem there.
Well, some friends and I had gone out one time at night and were taking some nighttime photographs and stuff, and we were out by an old a cemetery, and we were taking them with digital cameras, and we were, you know, previewing the photos and stuff, and one of them goes, "Oh my God, look, there are orbs." And I looked at the photo, and in fact, there were orbs everywhere. And I said, "Well, that's interesting. Well, I wonder what that is, actually." And of course, you know, the easiest explanation was, in fact, orbs. Well, it was actually, in fact, the flashing off of dust in the air.
Sure.
Right? And, so you can see what you want to see, and again, I think the Ghost Hunter stuff is largely very entertainment-oriented, and I don't put a lot of stock in the legitimacy of it.
I've always been intrigued by poltergeist, however. I don't necessarily know if ghosts are involved or anything of that nature, but, you know, a lot of stories about houses where really weird things happen, and there's usually always like a teenager in the house that's having, you know, a rough time. And, you know, you could say, well, that's the kid throwing shit around and that sort of thing. Maybe that's what the case is, but I don't know. It's strong emotions and weird things happening. I don't know. I'm open to that one far more than I am, you know, dead people coming back and lurking around a house. You'd think that they would have better things to do.
Yeah, I think absolutely, I believe there are things unexplained, be they, I don't know that I buy the explanation that it's dead people coming back to haunt us, but, you know, there is, you know, extra dimensional stuff. There is, you bring up emotions and you think about what quantum physics has shown us about the energy involved in what we transmit and what happens on a quantum level. And yeah, I'm sure there's weird stuff that happens. That's why this show exists. Weird stuff does happen, but I'm not sure I buy the cursory explanation for that. I've seen a lot of strange stuff in my life, but I've never seen anything that absolutely convinces me that there are in fact ghosts among us.
Have you ever gotten a poltergeist report?
Not as such, and trying to think back just off the top of my head, is there anything that could have been construed as that? And I don't know. Demon possession? I don't know. I think I could make a case for some of that. I say that comically speaking, of course, but I think I could absolutely present more evidence for demonic possession than I could ghosts or poltergeist.
Yeah, I would like to do a show sometime we've talked about hauntings, but like specific hauntings of certain places in general. I don't know. I think that sometimes weird things go on and I don't know what they are, but I'd like to hear some stories and have people attempt to convince me. But just your average ghost picture, you know, I took a picture of this dude's house across the street and there's a strange form in the window. I don't know about all of those. Seems like there are a lot of those, and it could be many different things. So maybe someday we'll do a show on a specific haunting. I am intrigued by hauntings, supposed hauntings that take place in places where great trauma has occurred, asylums or prisons, that sort of thing. Those always intrigue me, or even houses where perhaps there was there was actually when I was young there was a. This is for those of you that have heard the story of my ex girlfriend that once tried to stab me. She actually lived on a block where, like, six houses on that block, somebody had killed themselves, and that's weird.
Demonic possession again. I can make a case for it.
And she may have been possessed. She may have been possessed. We're going to wrap up the news segment for today. I want to thank Carl, as always, for doing this. And Carl, go ahead and get your plugs out.
CarlStern.com. That's where you go to get everything you need to know. Dragon King Carl on Twitter. And go to Facebook as Carl Stern.
And we'll be back in just a moment with Kevin Wallace. We're going to be talking the Illuminati and occult Disney. Carl, do you know much about occult Disney?
A little bit. I'm anxious to hear this. You know, they've... certainly, especially some of the early stuff, I'm real anxious to hear this. Very interesting topic.
So we'll be back in just a moment with Kevin. You're listening to After Dark Radio at BrianAlvarez.com. We are back here on the show. We are joined by Kevin Wallace, who's going to be talking a number of different subjects today, including the Illuminati. And as I noted earlier on in the show, not my area of expertise, so Kevin, you're going to have to illuminate me today, so to speak. How you doing?
I'm terrific, Brian. I just wanted to thank you for having me on the show today, actually. We had a little exchange there over email, and basically what you were saying is you're relatively new to some of this stuff, such as the Illuminati. Some of this information may be a little overwhelming, so I kind of want you to ask any questions that you see fit, if that makes sense to you.
Well, I have plenty of them.
All right, this sounds good. So do you have a question you want to start with?
Well, let's just start with the basic question. Tell everybody a little bit about what the Illuminati allegedly is.
Yes, exactly. Now, what's important is that key word, allegedly. because the Illuminati would be considered somewhat of a secret society, a lot of concrete proof and evidence as to its existence is fairly hard to come by, which is what you would assume. But if you kind of believe, the main belief in the Illuminati would be that, you know, there are certain families who do control the majority of the wealth and the land that we have on this on the earth. I mean, there's probably around 13 families that are considered to be more or less operating and orchestrating what's going on in the world as we know it. Was there a follow-up question from that, or
who would be some of the families, for example?
Yeah. Okay. Well, so what I did here is I kind of have a list of resources and biographies and such as to where I got some of my information. Now, there is a book called The 13 Illuminati Bloodlines and Mind Control, written by Fritz Springheimer. And Fritz basically lists 13 of the families, and I will list them right now here. Here they are. It's the Lees, the Collins, the Astors, the Bundys, the Kennedys, the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, Onassises, Van Dynes, DuPonts, Freemans, Russells, and Reynolds. Now, just because somebody has a last name such as these does not necessarily mean they are in the Illuminati. Basically, these are the 13 families that are to a degree, the richest families that this world has. And they keep the wealth inside these families and carefully distribute it to people who are considered part of their brotherhood or other families that they may have befriended. Can do research, and what's important to this is I don't want anybody to just take my word for this. I would definitely educate those to definitely check some of these resources for themselves. The internet is available for those reasons, and good old-fashioned books work as well.
I noticed you mentioned the Bundys. I presume not the Ted Bundy clan?
Well, there seems to be some sort of a link there to Ted Bundy, apparently. Now, if you kind of believe in some of this this mind control and things such as this, it's really not that hard to fathom that a family that owns or operates a portion of this world could have a crazy lunatic such as Ted Bundy operating in their system. And just the same, I mean, Bundy could have been... Ted Bundy could have been simply a pawn, from these families to do something that they wanted. Now, a lot of this stuff that I'm saying right now, I mean, I'm sure there's listeners thinking this is just completely whack. And that's the really difficult thing about talking about something like this. Is with every question, it opens up about four or five more questions, and we never get a true answer. I mean, we could talk for 2 hours, and I don't know if we'd be anywhere closer to figuring out the true agenda as to what's going on with these families. But it does seem that all 13 of these families seem to be in agreement of orchestrating a new world order, or a one world government at that, so that we're all under one umbrella, and there'd be no more, countries or anything like that. They want everything to merge together. So how they do that... I mean, it takes years. It takes some carefully orchestrating of politics and policies to enforce things such as that. So, like I said, I mean, we may not have all the answers for you here, Brian, but I definitely have some stuff here.
So now, have you actually heard? And make sure you speak right into the phone because you're a little quiet here. Have you actually heard? I guess, links between Ted Bundy and the Illuminati? I'm fascinated by this, actually.
Well, actually, Brian, what I did do is I have done a lot of research. It's very hard to get a hold of that book that I described there, The 13 Illuminati Bloodlines. Basically, you can find chapters. Now, each one of these chapters is anywhere from 10 to 85 pages on each one of these families. This is a very well-researched book. And there does seem to be some sort of link. I mean... I feel like an idiot saying it. I mean, I don't know necessarily what the link is entirely. I did read this book in the last few months, and kind of it was a little overwhelming to read all these families and how they blend in. So, that's one of those things I'd have to double check on. But it does seem like there is some sort of mention as to Ted Bundy in this book, the Illuminati bloodline.
Well, let me ask this question, because you mentioned the Kennedys.
Yes.
Somebody on our board had asked the question, ask him about Tupac. And
yes.
you had sent me some video links, and I'll cut to the chase here. We'll talk about Tupac here in a minute, but essentially the idea was that the Illuminati had murdered Tupac, perhaps Michael Jackson, perhaps Jimi Hendrix, and others. And my question would be, if the Kennedy family would be one of these bloodlines spoken about, what went wrong with JFK?
Yes, JFK and RFK.
Right.
Now there are actually that's the benefit of the internet is the ability to go on and check some of JFK's speeches and such, and there seems to be an overlining tone in a couple of his later speeches towards the end before he was murdered, where he does pose the question and does mention that there are secret societies out there. So it's tough to say if somewhere JFK just veered off the track of what these people may have wanted him to do and decided to maybe expose these people, and they felt like they had to take it into their own hands and kind of stop it right there before it got out of hand. But yeah, that is a great question to ask, is, okay, so if these families do exist, why are some of them casualties in strange circumstances?
So perhaps the idea would be that he was against the idea of a New World Order, and so he had to be exterminated.
That could be my belief. Now, there are a lot of conspiracies on JFK. I mean, that's the thing, is not everything is the truth. I mean, a lot of these conspiracies, there may be truth to them, but they're just sort of out there. I mean, there's those that believe he was killed by the mob and all different things. So, again, very difficult to put our finger on as to what it was. But yeah, he may have very well been opposed to it, and his family as well. I mean, you can actually research the Kennedys, and it seems like they've had a fair amount of tragedies since the JFK assassination, and that's definitely something that poses a good question and researching itself.
Now, I didn't write down a list of all of the families that you named. You rattled them off fairly quickly, but
yes.
It doesn't really matter. The question is just, of all of the families mentioned,
yes.
Have any of them ever been interviewed on the record about this, and have they either confirmed or denied participation in attempting to create a New World Order?
Well, I've never heard confirmations or denials on the Illuminati per se, but the Rockefellers have talked about a New World Order openly. I believe maybe even the last time was 92 or 93. I saw something recently where they did mention about ushering in a New World Order, which is very strange because, you know, if you do research these families, it seems like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers are in the forefront. As to leading what's going on here. I mean, you get New York is, there's the Rockefeller Center. There's, they basically own a fair amount of this world, just those two families alone.
Well, I guess the question would be, if these families, how many was it, 12, 13?
13.
13 families. Oh, coincidence. If these 13 families are 13 of the richest families in the world, what more do they stand to gain by creating a New World Order? It would seem that they've got a fair amount of power as it is.
Oh, yes, absolutely. They kind of got a strangle grip at this point. It's just, it seems that the agenda of the whole New World Order seems to be downsizing our world population. I think I overheard you say on last week's show or something that you were going to look into the Georgia Guidestones.
Yeah, we may go and check them out in Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly. Now, did you happen to see Decoded with that?
I have it on my DVR. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. Well, that basically what was interesting is they talk about how on the monument there's a mention of 500,000 to keep the balance of the world into 500 million people. Well, that is, funny enough, is actually exactly the number that the New World Order is looking for. They do feel that with a population from, anywhere from 6 to 8 billion, whatever we're at this point, we continuously grow, that we are a lot more difficult to handle, and we're a lot more independent thinkers and such. So having too many thoughts out there and too many people with their own opinions is that could rebel against these people is not something they want to take a chance with. You're absolutely right. If they own the majority of the world, then you know they're pretty well off right now. Well, why can't they just stop? But if they really do want to downsize this world and have all this wealth and power and live their idea of a fulfilled life, there will definitely have to be sacrifices. And a lot of these families, such as the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, have funded wars. The Rothschilds, despite the fact that they are Jewish, the Rothschilds actually helped Adolf Hitler and fund World War II for him. Not just that, but wars, you know, Vietnam and such. The Rockefellers actually fund both sides of the opposition. It's a money-making opportunity for them to give people money and give them interest rates on that, and have either the payback with interest, or basically have that politician or president or anything in their back pocket.
Now, we did mention briefly a little bit earlier the theory that Tupac was murdered by the Illuminati, and I guess tell everybody a little bit about that. And it is interesting that if you read a lot of Tupac's lyrics, I mean, he does speak quite a bit about the Illuminati, in fact.
He does, and he really amps it up near the end of his career when he was in jail, because it seems like Tupac, his mother was a Black Panther, okay? So his mother was pretty much in the know as to the way that the government operates and the oppression brought towards the Black people back in the 70s and 80s. So Tupac was always kind of aware of things such as this, maybe not necessarily the Illuminati, but about how people are used in the forefront. So basically, he knew that he was at one point basically a pawn. He was living this lifestyle that was relatively new to the scene. I mean, there was always rappers around, but he lived that gangster type image where he talked about shooting people, killing people, doing drugs, sleeping, having promiscuous sex, things such as that. Now, the real Tupac was a poet. He was a very smart man, very articulate guy. He has some terrific songs that really explain terrific stories in general. But he was pressured into doing these other type of songs. And basically, it was then, after he had made these songs, that he started to realize exactly what was going on, and that by doing these songs and putting them out for young, naive teenagers to listen to, you're really making those kids rebellious. You know, some people say that a certain type of music are dated, and it's true, we do evolve with the times, but gangster rap really became popular around that time. Not just that, but Biggie was also a gangster rapper as well. So they were originally friends, they kind of started feuding, and it seems like one of the reasons they started feuding is that Tupac was fully aware that all these rappers were going with the Illuminati, more or less just putting that image out there that the Illuminati wanted, this total anarchy, desensitization of our society, making us do things that we know are wrong, but just doing them anyway. Actually, Tupac, I don't want to elaborate too long on this and waste your time here, but Tupac, more or less, his last album was actually called Don Killumati, which would be Kill Illuminati for short. And basically, it's him talking about Machiavelli. Now, Machiavelli was a person way back in the day. I'm very limited on my knowledge of Machiavelli, but he more or less faked his own death to get away from his enemies. So there is a belief that, you know, for years that people thought Tupac had faked his own death, but I think Tupac was spreading a message. I think Tupac knew his days were numbered, and he was looking to get out of Death Row Records, and Death Row owned him at the time, and more or less, if Tupac died while he was being owned by Death Row, then they would own all his music, and you know, maybe that's one of the reasons he was killed. But the truth of the matter is, there is a documentary called Biggie and Tupac. I can't name the actual guy who made the documentary, but it's a very well done documentary that explains actually and pinpoints who exactly killed Tupac. He was an undercover police agent. It's not just a theory. There are eyewitness reports. There are sketches of this man. He single-handedly points out who this man was that killed Tupac. And basically, Tupac was starting to rebel. He was starting to let people know, and you can find interviews on YouTube where he's letting people know that there are people behind behind the scenes that are doing things that are going to affect our society in the long run, and we're just not aware of it.
So the motive was that Tupac was going to expose the Illuminati, and so he had to be done in.
More or less, that is the belief, and what's interesting is that when Tupac was murdered, he was actually in the car with Suge Knight. Now, Suge Knight, you know, technically owned Tupac at that point. Tupac was shot several times, and Suge was shot once, he claims. Now, from what I've heard, Suge was never even shot. He had glass shards hit the side of his head. But if Suge Knight was actually in the works with whoever was killing Tupac and had ultimate trust in him, you may be willing to take a risk with sitting in the car, having Tupac shot next to you, if you truly know the gunman. Does that make any sense to you? I know it's still a very strange thought.
Sure.
I mean, like, there is a possibility that it could have been orchestrated that way, that someone knew Tupac was going to be there at that moment.
Now, the video, it mentioned Tupac, Michael Jackson, Jimi Hendrix, and others. There seems to be a common thread through all of these, that being the music industry. And why the music industry and the Illuminati of all businesses?
Well, when you actually think about this, is that our eyes and our ears are only registering a certain percentage of what's out there. Our brains are so much more active than the filters, such as the ears and the eyes. So when you watch a movie, you may not necessarily notice something that's on the screen. It may be your third or fourth time that your brain says, hey, I didn't notice that the first time. Or these songs, too, that, you know, our brains work in very mysterious ways. We may switch lyrics in our head without knowing them. We may have high-pitched frequencies that we're not even aware of that may alter our moods or make us feel sick. But it definitely seems like there are a lot of songs that you can find where, when reversed, it's almost strangely audible, devil-worshipping type music. There's Led Zeppelin's "Stairway to Heaven" has always been rumored to have these satanic type verses in them, and if you actually listen to it, I think I'd kind of agree that there is something in those songs that's very strange when you replay it a certain way.
Yeah, I've heard some of the backward, I don't know if they call it backward masking or what the exact term is, but I've heard some of it, or just, you know, taking a song and just playing the song backwards. And I've always been skeptical of such things, although when I was a kid, I don't know if you've ever heard of Wilson Brian Key, but
no.
He wrote a series of books about subliminal advertising, and, you know, he would take these ads and he would point out, you know, we can talk about this later with the occult Disney, how the story that in the Little Mermaid on the cover, on the poster,
yeah,
one of the turrets of the castle is shaped like a penis.
Mm-hmm.
And his he had a bunch of different advertisements, and he would point out, look at this, you know, this obviously was drawn to be a penis, and you're not supposed to know that, but your subliminal mind is going to see that, and I guess it made you more apt to buy the product or whatever. And he had a lot of them that I looked at him, and for example, he'd It would be an advertisement for, say, beer, or beer's a bad example, liquor of some sort, hard liquor, and he would say, look at that ice cube, there's a face in the ice cube. And I would look at the ice cube and I would think, okay, yes, I can see a face in this ice cube, much the way I would see a face in the clouds. So I wasn't so sold on the ice cube one, but there were a few of the ads that were in this book that I don't care how much you want to tell me that this is like looking for faces in the clouds. This stuff was so ridiculously, I mean, once you saw it, it's like it's impossible to not see it. And it was a big thing. I don't know I don't know how widespread it was in the 70s, but after reading that book, you could not convince me that in the 70s there were not attempts by certain companies to put subliminal messages in advertising.
Absolutely, and I think that's the strange thing, too, is there is such thing as a coincidence. Again, not everything is a conspiracy, but a lot of these things are far from coincidences. I'll tell you right now something that really kind of made me think is that one of my New Year's resolutions was to stop eating junk food and eating out. So recently I was on my way home, I passed by a McDonald's, and I found myself turning into the left lane where I would turn to go to McDonald's. There was no thought in my head that I was hungry or anything. I just had veered off directly into that lane and was going to go to McDonald's. And I mean, like, I don't know what the reasoning was behind that or anything. I wasn't actually hungry. It just sort of happened. So I do believe that there are some subliminal things here that do influence certain things that we do. And I mean, you know, we all have musical tastes or movies that we like that we can't necessarily put our finger on as to why we enjoy that, but we just do. So those are the kind of questions that you have to ponder too, you know. But what you were saying about Walt Disney and the phallus on the cover of The Little Mermaid, that's not even just a coincidence. That's actually been admitted to having been a disgruntled employee who is in his final days working for Walt Disney, and who actually put that in there as an ultimate FU to Walt Disney himself.
We'll get into some of the Disney stories here in a bit. I wanted to focus a little bit more here on the Illuminati and the music business. And since you're talking about it, McDonald's, I mean, what other sort of conspiracy type theories have you heard in regards to subliminal advertising or subliminal messages? You briefly mentioned some songs that you can play backwards, but what else have you investigated?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can just look at regular things. I mean, I know you're a few years older than me, Brian, but I was born in 1984. So a good example I actually use to people is, you know, I grew up to the normal, regular NES, Nintendo. When I was gaming, I played that or Atari. Now, the games we played back then were very basic. They were relatively low on shooting of people and killing and murdering and things such as that. In the 26 years since then, kids are now playing games such as Call of Duty, where they're being more or less subjected to shooting people. That would be a form, in my opinion, of somewhat of a subliminal, is just how things like that have changed just over the course of 20-some years, and how our brains and our children are, you know, more or less being desensitized to things such as this. You know, there's movies out there that, you know, it's not just Walt Disney who has some sketchy things in his movies. There are a ton of movies out there and that deal with that sort of thing.
What would the end game be of desensitizing the children?
I think it will ultimately lead to total anarchy. I mean, I know, I guess, I seem to be the old-fashioned of Generation Y or X or whatever the heck I am, but I was raised on respecting your elders. You know, if you're on the bus and there's an old man, you know, offer up your seat, hold the door open for people. You know, don't raise your voice, you know, at older people. And nowadays, I mean, you can just look outside. These people walking around like they don't care, young children, you know, more and more parents, more and more broken homes, kids that are only being raised by one parent, things such as that. And I think that there's nobody really watching these kids. And I mean, they listen to music, they play these violent video games, they watch movies, you know, with tons of violence. And I think that to a degree that does make you have less remorse for people. I mean, you see people walking by, homeless people, and they laugh. That person, I don't think, chose to be homeless. I don't think it's worthy of laughing at that man.
Hey, you're very low, so make sure you get right into the phone.
Hey, sorry, Brian.
Yeah, in terms of secret societies, we're going to... I wanted to ask you a little bit about Freemasonry, because you would obviously know a fair amount about this, as your, I believe, grandfather and uncle, both Freemasons?
Correct, they both are. Now, neither have been to the lodge for a few years now. Both my aunt and grandmother have been sick, and their priority right now is their families. Now, still, it seems like they're still somewhat secretive as to what they tell me. I have gathered a ton of research in about five or six books I've read. There's this gentleman named Christopher Knight who is actually a Freemason and talks about the secrets of Freemasonry that he is able to discuss. But my uncle and grandfather have more or less acknowledged that there is a lot of speeches going on at these when they all get together. As to what the speeches are, they're very hesitant in telling me what is being said in these speeches. But I did email you and mention that a lot of these people, when you are graduating to a different degree of Freemasonry, have to recite these 40-to-hour-long speeches that they are speaking from based on having listened to. These people haven't read these speeches and memorized them. They are speaking them out of their hearts or out of whatever it is you want to consider it is that they have, and they're basically going from there. And if they are to screw up or stumble upon one of their phrases or sentences, they either are restarted or they can't graduate to the next degree of Freemasonry. Now, if somebody is a relatively new entrant into Freemasonry, it is actually a little more than just a social club. I mean, it's not much more different than going to a jiu-jitsu class or going to school, meeting some friends in your class. That person, needs a favor or something. You're willing to help that person out.
Sure. You know?
So I don't know. I guess I don't know if that really answers your question.
But you have you said, for example, Grandpa, what goes on in these meetings? And he's like, well, you know, we say some speeches, but that's all I'm going to say about it.
Yeah, and for years, actually, that's pretty much all the only real answer I had. It's only as of recently that I've kind of to investigate, and being that I was able to read these books that provided more answers, I was able to ask certain questions that I maybe not necessarily wouldn't have got an answer out of them originally. Now, my uncle and grandfather have both acknowledged something called a MAME. I believe that's how I'm pronouncing it. It could be a mem. No, it's a mame, sorry. Now, what a mame is for Freemasonry, basically, it's going to sound very strange, but the mame would be what is talking out of you when you are giving these speeches.
Hmm.
Now, that sounds very strange, but when you actually research Freemasonry and what they actually stand by, they more or less believe we are all born without a soul, and that through time, we can actually build and have a soul. But that soul is more or less a meme. So it's this being inside of you that is talking for you. Now, if you were to tell somebody that when they're asking questions about Freemasonry and possibly going to get interested in Freemasonry, you're not going to tell them about something like that because they're just going to say, that sounds too messed up for me.
Sure, a little preposterous.
And it's very hard to fathom because you look at it and say, this isn't even possible. This doesn't make sense. But the longer you were to stay in something like that, they have a lot of things such as geography graphs and things of that nature where they actually they do a lot of math. They do a lot of studying coordinates, geography, things like that that would maybe heighten their levels of enlightenment maybe, get them get their soul to another level.
How does one become a Mason?
You can't necessarily. You actually have to ask to be a Freemason. That's the way it works. Is they can't necessarily go recruiting you. Now, I have talked to my grandfather and my uncle. It seems like there's interest from them in having somebody like me join. I'm the only one in the family. None of the family except for those two are Freemasons, and my middle name is the namesake of my grandfather. So, to a degree, I think he'd maybe like to see me go that route, but from what I know, it's something I don't want anything to do with. Now, there are initiation rituals to this. When you are initiated into becoming a Freemason, you are blindfolded and cloaked in a cloak, basically. You're stripped naked and put in a cloak, and you walk around in a certain fashion. You have somebody hold your arm in a certain fashion. They are guiding you the entire time as to what you are doing. Not just that, but when you enter certain levels in the room where they take you around in circles and such, certain body parts are exposed. So things such as this don't make sense to me, therefore I want nothing to do with it. The final initiation is that you have to kiss a book that you cannot see and basically basically say that you're going to worship this book. What that book is, it seems like these early entry-level Freemasons have no clue what it is. They just go along thinking that this is just kind of fun or one of those fun rituals such as we experience, some of us, in university. Also, what's needed for a Freemason when they actually do, you have to ask for an application, and you have to fill up the application, and then they have an interview with you and see your motives as to why you want to be a Freemason. And there is a question to ask. Now, as for the exact wording, I'm not 100% sure, but it's something along the lines of, do you believe in there being a supreme being? And they're not asking you if you believe in God. They're just asking you if you do believe that there is something that created us in the universe. And if you do say that you agree, then you are on your way to becoming a Freemason. If you don't believe that something made us who we are today, whether it be God or something else, then they don't want anything to do with that person.
So there's an application.
There is an application. Now, I can confirm there's an application because my uncle, about a month and a half ago when I last saw him, he said you should ask your grandfather for an application. I said, I'm not interested. So there is definitely an application.
Now, when they ask you your motives for wanting to become a Freemason, I mean, that's kind of a difficult question to answer if you don't know anything about Freemasonry, which presumably you would not if you wanted to become a Mason.
Well, that's exactly it. I think what this starts at, Brian, is a lot of people see this as an opportunity to give back to the community. We have things such as the Shriners and things like that help help those who need help. A lot of these people see this as an opportunity to kind of give back to their community. It's more or less a brotherhood, as there's no women involved in Freemasonry, so it's just guys being guys. I think that they want to know that when you're getting in, you're not getting in to be malicious. You're not getting into meeting well-to-do people. A lot of Freemasons actually tend to have a fair amount of money, and I think they believe that some people would use this as an opportunity to make some friends that could be politicians or could help them somewhere down the line. So I think they just want to know that your motives are true and that you're here to learn what it is you think you're learning, and you're going from there.
Now, the dollar bill allegedly has, I guess, Masonic imagery on it. Is that the story?
Yeah, absolutely. It's got the pyramid and on the back of it, does it not?
Yeah, there is a pyramid and what appears to be the all-seeing eye.
The all-seeing eye, absolutely. And that that logo is actually on a fair amount of things. I mean, like, you actually look at, like, the logo for AOL or CBS, Columbia Records, any of those kind of things. They closely resemble either an eye or a triangle. Now, again, a lot of these things are just speculation, but what you're saying are key questions that do need to be asked, and we need to ask ourselves, because something like that just—it totally seems out of place on the bill. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily doesn't fit with the design or anything like that. So why is it on there?
I mean, the eye aside, there is a pyramid on the back of the bill. What is some of the imagery that people point out here? And if you know, I guess, any of the official explanations for why there would be, for example, a pyramid on the back of the dollar bill, what would those be?
Well, the Rothschilds are actually it seems like the Rothschilds were a part of our creating the world banking system, if not pretty much solely responsible for that. So the Rothschilds, if they were legitimately Illuminati members who identify themselves with either a triangle or a circle, may throw something like that onto a dollar bill. I mean, it would be easy if you're running, the banking system to create money with a visual such as that. Now, I think the majority of people just don't see that, right? It's not necessarily there. I mean, you know, you're not going to necessarily just grab a bill in your spare time and just examine it. But I think that that's there for them to show people that, you know, here we are, we own your money supply. Similar to, you know, like the one eye, right, the all-seeing eye. How many movie covers do you see, or CD covers, where only one eye of the musician or actor is visible? I mean, I think that's just a trademark for people to show that this is the type of movie it is. And a majority of people would not know that that's what it's being used for, but I think it's just an ultimate, like, tip of the cap to everybody else.
So at what level would a person, I guess, be recruited into the Illuminati or whatever society it might be that is putting these eyes everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, if you mention that it permeates, you know, movie posters and you know, CD covers and that sort of thing, obviously, you know, it would be all over the place. I mean, they would be everywhere. So at what level, for example, when would I be approached?
Okay, so the reality is, I mean, like, the Illuminati, it would more or less be the tops of some of these secret societies. I mean, we talked a little bit about Freemasonry, but there's societies such as the Skull and Bones that basically would more or less be entry levels up the ladder to the Illuminati. So the Illuminati is not going to mess around and recruit somebody who can give them nothing. Politicians, people that are going to have a say in the ultimate agenda of what these people want are going to be used. So, Brian, I don't know where you would fit in if they would necessarily try to recruit you or anything like that.
I got a ways to go, essentially.
Sorry?
I got a ways to go, essentially.
Yeah, I would probably say that, unless you want to put some strange music or something that they're willing to give you at the beginning and ending of your shows to mind warp us or something like that.
Or unless I may already be there.
You may be.
I may be. Now,
what I did want to say about some of the CD covers and stuff is that I know for a fact you are a wrestling fan, and you know, Diamond Dallas Page used to do the diamond, right? The shape of the diamond.
The diamond cutter, yeah.
Correct, yes. Now Jay-Z does that. Jay-Z also, when he does it, he tends to have his eye at the top of the triangle. Now this is interesting to bring up Jay-Z, because Jay-Z claims to have started a record company and a career, and he became a rapper with money he funded from dealing cocaine. That is what Jay-Z claims to do. But the truth of the matter is Jay-Z, just like Tupac, just like Biggie, was recruited by the Illuminati, and it's not a coincidence that Jay-Z's record label is named Rockefeller.
So the diamond symbol is actually him creating an all-seeing eye.
Correct, exactly. And not just that, but Jay-Z works with several musicians, such as Rihanna. Rihanna's most recent CD, Rated R, her hand is over one of her eyes, and there is the Illuminati R on the cover of it. So if you actually look at that cover, it does pose a couple questions as to why that's on it. People such as Lady Gaga, all these people, it seems, have been are basically at the forefront of creating this image for us, and we're supposed to leech onto these people and to a degree idolize these people. And I mean, you look back to times before TV and before radio, it was really difficult to to really admire people. When I mean, the majority of the people you're seeing are people in your town or your family. Whereas nowadays, it's so easy. I mean, the world loves a good to bring somebody up, and they like to see them fall, too. And a lot of these people, it seems like that's what they're doing it for.
Now, my wife is a fan of Lady Gaga, so
okay.
Obviously...
I'm not saying your wife is evil or bad or anything like that.
Well, I'm just saying, what should my concern be, aside from the fact that she listens to Lady Gaga all the time?
Yeah,
I mean, what is the end game here for the idea of, okay, we need these people to look up to Lady Gaga, for example, yeah, because then we are going to what?
Exactly, and I think that's one of the things is Lady Gaga is really no different than what Madonna was 20 or 30 years ago. Basically, what they talk about and, you know, like in their songs, they're basically spreading, you know, obviously we know what a disco stick means when Lady Gaga is referring to it. So they're talking more and more
Phallus.
Openly about being promiscuous, doing, you know, strange things. I mean, anytime I see Lady Gaga in the news, it's like she's wearing something just to get some sort of reaction from people.
Sure.
I was looking in the newspaper the other day, and she was wearing a suit made out of a condom. Is that not the strangest thing you've ever heard? Like, why is she on a news show? First of all, she's not news. None of this is news when you talk about Lady Gaga and what's going on in her life. But she's basically making music, and in a way, it's the music she's talking about and the dialogue and the lyrics she's putting out are kind of encouraging certain behaviors, such as, you know, promiscuity, that really don't need to be spread. I mean, we aren't living in a world where everybody's a virgin before marriage and everything, but I don't necessarily think that every single song on the radio has to either be about sex directly or have or subtly implying it.
Now, when
I wouldn't worry about your wife listening to the music or anything like that, but I mean, like that type of music is used for those reasons, and it's a lot harder to implant subliminal messages in someone when they're not a child.
Now, when you say certain people were recruited by the Illuminati, for example, I'll just keep using Lady Gaga since we're on the subject.
Yeah.
Would she have been recruited? I mean, would she be aware of what is going on here, or it would just, for example, her? I don't know, maybe the head of the record company, perhaps he would be the only one who is aware of this, and he maybe influences certain individuals who then influence her manager, who then influences her. I mean, is she well aware of what is going on, or is she a pawn?
In the case of Lady Gaga, I'm very, very sure she is aware of the Illuminati. I've actually heard interviews and seen interviews where she talks about the Illuminati, and there is one interview I saw where she's discussing a dream she had, and she's talking about this dream to her mother, and she says, you know, like I believe she's sitting in a chair, and her arms and legs are being ripped away, and that's a dream she had. She's talking to her mom, and her mom says something along like that's a dream, like that's an Illuminati torture or something like that, and basically like. So she's talking about these things and having these really random dreams, and she's confronting her mom about it, and her mom's talking about how there are Illuminati things in this world, and that seems to be one of the occult practices. So I don't know, like, the majority of these people, like, I do believe that people such as Jay-Z, probably Rihanna, they are aware of what they're doing. I don't think people like Justin Bieber are really aware of what's going on. Unfortunately, people like him, Britney Spears, they're kind of used when they're young. You can get somebody when they're young, implant some thoughts and some kind of visuals and some subliminary messages in their heads, and that person, over time, they continue to shine in the spotlight. That person's going to be a star and looked at to millions of people. And then when they have an attitude change, others may have that same attitude change. I mean, we've all seen the rise and fall of Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan. I mean, like, those are just examples right there.
Now, in the case of a Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan, we don't have to mention any specific names here, but if we can use those specific names since you mentioned a fall. If somebody has been tapped by the Illuminati, for example, and let's say that they're Britney Spears and she's selling sex or whatever the case might be in her songs, and then at some point she decides she's going to become a mother and she begins to mellow out. Is that bad times? Is that what leads to these falls because she's, I guess, going against perhaps what the Illuminati would have wanted and thus trouble's coming for her, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I would say that probably. I mean, like, you had mentioned Michael Jackson earlier, and this just kind of reminds me of a little bit of Michael. It's like Michael Jackson was him and the Jackson 5, they were like these, the young kids with these terrific voices or whatever who were pretty much brought to the spotlight, and they had, more or less a cult following. But they were too young and naive to see what was really going on in some of their songs. I mean, check the song Thriller by Michael Jackson, right? You've seen that video before?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So there's that strange, the strange chanting in the graveyard and, summoning of a spirit and things such as that, that just, being that the video is kind of like a Halloween-type video, I understand it, but it's very strange that that's in there. So I think when Michael Jackson was young and naive, he wasn't aware that he was being used for these things, I think that when he was aware, there's interviews where Michael Jackson says that Tommy Mottola was doing devilish things. Tommy Mottola was the owner of Sony Records, so he was distributing music.
I believe he called him a devil at one point.
He did, exactly. Now, I think that Michael Jackson was slow to educate the masses, but I think that that's the main thing, too, right? I mean, like, it's a lot of this stuff is really really difficult to handle. It's very overwhelming, so you have to approach it very slowly. So if he were to just come out and say something like that, like, you know, you could just imagine people would think he's a whack job. So I think he slowly started rebelling against them. And people like Britney Spears, I mean, she may have the realization, you know what, I've done that phase, I've had that phase in my life, I want to be a mom now. If she's not going to necessarily speak out against them, I don't see why they necessarily would have to try to bring her down.
Mm.
I mean, like, even, you know, Madonna has been successful for years, but she's never talked about them in general, but the girl has talked about absolutely everything else. I mean, she's talked about in her songs, like, you know, being a lesbian. She's, you know, done weird things with a crucifix in her video. She's basically doing the things that they want her to do, so she's more or less going to be safe. She could have terrible things happen to her, or all these terrible allegations come out, and when you own the newspaper and things like that, you don't necessarily let that information get out to the public because she's kind of in your back pocket.
Now, if you are tapped by the Illuminati and you essentially do as they request, you are rewarded with fame and fortune, I presume.
Yeah, well, that person's definition of fame and fortune, right? Like, you know, my definition of fame and fortune and yours may differ, but, you know, the reality is they've created this image in our minds that, you know, the true definition of fame is to have a lot of money and people, you know, bowing at your presence and things like that. So they may find that, listen, if I'm willing to do this, I can have it. They see these movie stars that have it. And everything happens just so quickly. I mean, people like Lil Wayne and Lady Gaga have been doing music forever, but it's just all of a sudden they blew up. So that's where you have to question certain things like that. It's like, you know, people try to be musicians for years and never get to that spot. So why do others get into the spotlight immediately? Where they don't necessarily fit a certain image, they just seem kind of almost out of place in a certain field, either, you know, acting or music, and they're just sort of there, and they're basically used as a pawn, a tool.
Now, if I were an aspiring artist, and I'd put out a number of songs, small independent labels, a few hundred people bought them, not really going anywhere, I mean, would there be a way for me to get the word out to the Illuminati that I'm willing to, you know, do some stuff here in exchange for my idea of fame and fortune? Because, you know, you would presume that they don't just come calling when you've made it big. They've got to come calling prior to you making it big. So I guess what would be the, I mean, is this something that a band would, their manager, I mean, how exactly would this work?
I don't know necessarily if you can really, because they are in a veil of secrecy, if you can necessarily...
Can't really send them a letter, for example, or an email?
That would be too easy. No, I really don't know how that works. I know that they do have a stranglehold in the music industry, and I would believe that some of these high-up executives at places such as Interscope and Sony would have the ability of doing things such as this. Not to veer off too much, but there is a gentleman named John Todd where you can find his videos on YouTube. Now, John Todd is a former self-proclaimed Illuminati member. He talks about having a discussion with David Crosby, from the group Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And he has a discussion with him and basically asks Crosby how the music is made. And Crosby says, well, you know how the music is made. And he's like, no, I want to hear it from you. And the way John Todd tells the story is Crosby actually mentions that they usually wait to produce the CD for the night of a full moon. They have the witches and wickers is what he refers to them as, enter a room and chant holy spells, or unholy spells, I should say, while they make the song. So whether or not, now that's John Todd. I mean, you can actually research John Todd, and there's a lot of contradictory things. Some that expose that maybe he was a complete whack job, whereas others say maybe he has some truth to what he's saying. I just do find that kind of strange. And again, you tell somebody that, and they're like, there's no way that's a possibility. But you know what? In this day and age, why does it take, you know, 6 months for a CD to come out when it's blatantly done 6 months ago? You know, like, I know that they have to make X amount of copies and all this kind of stuff, but in this day and age and technology, like, things are almost instantaneous. with everything. So why do things have to wait to a certain time or certain date? It definitely poses a couple questions. And again, I'm on the show here not to necessarily, well, I want to give you my opinion, but not necessarily come across as my opinion is completely honest and 100% true. I mean, I do say that people should educate themselves and check this stuff for themselves, but that one is definitely a good question.
Now, John Todd, yes. This fella claims he was once a member of the Illuminati. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, earlier we were talking about if you stray, that could be the end of you. And one would think that if John Todd was a former Illuminati now giving out their secrets, they would have him killed. Or is the argument that if they kill him, it becomes obvious that then therefore he must have been a member of the Illuminati? What is the belief
here?
Yeah.
Well, that's where it's difficult to decipher with John Todd too, is because John Todd was in jail when he died.
So he is dead.
Yes, John Todd is now dead. I believe he died in the late 90s or something. The audios that you can find on YouTube or any site are from John Todd in 1972. Now, he had been subjected to, he was in jail because he began speaking out against these things. He's actually, you can find transcripts of letters he wrote while he was in jail where he's basically saying, I'm going to die in the next 2 days. There's a prisoner being sent here who stabbed me a couple years back at another jail, and he's coming for me, and all this stuff happens. And then, again, you check
the internet. You're pretty low.
Sorry. Yeah. You can check the internet for John Todd, but it's really difficult to find out exactly who this guy was, if he was definitely a reliable source or if he was somebody that was truly a whack job. But the fact is that John Todd did die, and he did die when he was in prison. Now, when you're in prison, it's very strange when you die. He didn't die of old age. I believe it was said he had a heart attack. Whether he did or not, I'm not sure. But if you're speaking up against these people and these people own jails and stuff, I don't think they're going to take care of you very much.
What was he in prison for?
John Todd, I believe, I can't even remember what it was, actually. It was, he had been accused of raping a woman, and then when it was going to court and everything, two people came up and said that he had, two children, said that he had molested them at a karate course of some sort. So he had these three different allegations of rape. Or sexual molestation towards little children against him, and that's why he was in prison.
Hmm. Now, before you came on the show, Carl and I were talking about, almost said Todd, it'd be very difficult. Carl and I were talking about Bohemian Grove, and the, I don't know if you saw the Brad Meltzer program on it.
I did, actually. I also watched the Alex Jones version.
Okay, now I, after watching the show, and obviously this is also kind of the way that they want to lead you, my impression was that it is a super secret, high-end gentleman's club. It's a, if you're invited, you get together, a lot of weird stuff goes on, but it's largely just, harmless fun is the wrong word. I guess whatever the opposite of sinister would be. It is not sinister. Now, in your opinion, from doing various investigations, do you feel that I am incorrect here and that, in fact, sinister things are going on at Bohemian Grove?
I'll agree with both points there. Now, what I would definitely suggest is the Alex Jones version. It's fairly lengthy, but Alex Jones actually is able to record the whole ceremony where they have a talking owl, where they have the cremation of care, as they refer to it as. Now, I think that there is probably a strong, it's my personal belief that the majority of the people that are going here are probably just going for, shits and giggles. They're going to hang out with friends, have a good time, have a few drinks, and they don't necessarily know what they're there for. It's just, it's a bonding experience. It's the brotherhood, like they say. Whereas others, I do believe they kind of know what is going on. There is some sort of cremation going on. Whether the body is real or not, I'm led to believe that the body was probably, that it was just an artificial body that they were burning.
Well, hold on. Before we go any further, explain to everybody this the owl and the cremation ceremony and whatever else is going on during this whole deal.
Okay, so long story short, if you Again, I would definitely recommend actually checking out the Alex Jones Bohemian Grove. But if you can't, basically what it is Alex Jones walking around talking to these random people he doesn't know, but they're powerful elite people that are here by invitation. Alex Jones just strolls up and gets into this place on his own, and he goes around and shows you some of these people. Now, if you're thinking that these people that he has on camera are people like George Bush or Kim Jong-il or people such as that, you're kind of mistaken, because there's nobody in this video that really leads me to believe that there's, you know, I didn't see Barack Obama in the video or anybody like that. But it seems like there are some powerful people that are here. It's a very recluse, secretive type lodge that they're at. So he basically walks around. He stumbles into people, has a few short conversations. He shows that people are drinking, having a good time. Now, when it turns to night, people are seated on one side of the river. And on the other side of the river, there's I believe he's 40 feet tall. There's a 40-foot tall owl. And
it's a big owl.
Yes. Now, what's interesting about the owl is that he talks. And, I mean, if you saw the Brad Meltzer, which you did, he mentions that Walter Cronkite is the voice of the owl. Now, the owl basically gets in a conversation of sorts with...
Hold on. Let me cut you off here. Now, the video that you saw... I mean, was the voice of the owl Walter Cronkite?
You know what? I would probably say it is. Now, the video was actually shot in, I believe, 95, so the quality itself is not fantastic.
Sure.
But I would probably, like, you can make out what's being said. As for the exact speaker, it's very difficult to see, but I think there are actually some written words at the bottom of the screen, so you can kind of figure out what's being said. But I would probably agree that it is Walter Cronkite, 95% sure. So basically, a master of ceremonies, priest, whatever you want to call this gentleman, comes out, he starts talking, he talks about how the season's changing, blah, 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 there must be a cremation of sorts, and out comes this body, brought out a small body, it seems to be a wooden body, just, you know, fake, and it's brought out in a carriage, and long story short, eventually it is burnt after a dialogue with the owl saying, if you burn this body, I'll, you know, more or less I grant you your land fertility and allow you to grow things off this land with this cremation. So that's basically what they do. Now, again, I don't think a lot of people really understand what is being done when this is going on. I think they just go along with it and see it as harmless fun, whereas if you look into, like, the occult and things like that, like, these things are really things that shouldn't be messed with. You shouldn't be burning things as mock sacrifices, whether they be mock sacrifices or real sacrifices. It's not something that should be done. So basically the whole video is Alex Jones sitting there recording the whole entire thing, and it's very interesting. It's definitely worth a watch, and yeah, that's pretty much
it. And then what happened after he finished recording? I mean, I presume he got out with it.
Yeah, he got out with it. And the video ends where he basically talks about the footage that he shot. I think the last 10 minutes is him replaying it and talking as it goes along. But he seemingly gets out safe. I mean, he's got this video to show for it, and I mean, he got out.
Now, you mentioned George Bush earlier, who is a member, or I presume still is a member of Skull and Bones.
Correct.
And you mentioned that being an entry level. Secret society. So would you presume that he's also in others much higher up on the chain?
Yeah, I would say with George W. Bush and his father, because it seems like his father was it seems like he was one of the founders of the Skull and Bone Society. Now, what's interesting about the Skull and Bone Society is you can actually find, it's not just a theory, but the Skull and Bones, including George W. Bush's father, they actually dug up a dead body from a grave.
What?
And, yes, exactly. So you actually got to examine this. Now, the gentleman's name, I believe, was Geronimo. I don't actually have that as one of my papers here. But yeah, he was an Indian who had scalped, I believe, 49...
Wait. They dug up the actual Geronimo?
Correct. Now, not just that, Brian, but they actually have, still to this day, they have the bones of Geronimo. And they're showcased in the Skull and Bones. Like, they have a secret room in, I don't want to say for sure, but maybe Yale University, one of their main main housing lodges. They actually claim to still have the bones right there. And not just that, but they have a picture of Geronimo just above the bones.
Now, where... Who, what, when, where, why, and how?
Great questions. I don't know all the answers. I don't know what would make someone think that digging up a dead body in the first place would be a good idea. I don't know if there was they had to grab something or someone, and they with that did some sort of black magic and resurrected some sort of spirit. Again, all this is more or less like hearsay and theories. I mean, the concrete evidence of this is very slim, but again, there is acknowledgement that these people still have the bones, and I believe they actually had to go to court about this a few years ago, in like the early 90s, and return the body, and then they claimed that the bones had disappeared.
Hmm.
But they did acknowledge that at one point they had legitimately dug up this body and did have the bones of Geronimo.
Now, was there ever an explanation as to why...
No, and that's the thing, is these people don't ask the questions. They don't ask the questions because it seems like they don't want the answer, or they know that by asking the question...
I want this answer, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
I want this
answer, too. I've always been interested. I remember seeing a movie, The Skulls, all those years back, and, you know, somewhat is similar to The Skull and Bones, and it really had me thinking about some of these secret societies, and I would love to know the answer to these things. It just seems like they're not willing to give it to us. I mean, I don't know who the person is to ask that question.
Well, I suppose your grandfather would not be the best person to start with.
I don't think he'd know the answers to that.
Now, we're starting to run low on time here, but I've got some other stuff I've got to ask you about.
Sure.
We promised talking about occult Disney, and what are some of the strange imagery that can be seen in various Disney films?
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to bring these up. Again, stop me. I just want to get into some of these before we run out of time. The Rescuers. I think you saw that scene from The Rescuers where there is a nude woman.
Yes.
In the window. Now, what is very strange about that is this is a cartoon movie. This is not a drawing of a naked woman. This is an actual picture of a naked woman. So how it found its way into a scene where, actually, you could see the scene 10 times and not even necessarily notice it. It's not all that visible. But when you actually pause the screen, you can see it clear as day.
Now, wasn't there a story that... I guess the story was that Walt Disney claimed that he had such a great eye... an all-seeing eye, perhaps.
Yes.
Such a great eye that if there was a mess-up in a single frame of any of these films, he would be able to pick it out. And for film, it would be 24 frames per second. So, you know, 1/24th of a second, he claimed that he could pick out an error. And so apparently the story goes that his... you know, one of his animators put in a single frame of a naked woman, and I guess there are two endings to the story. The one ending is that when the film was over, he said stop, or no, it, I guess when it just passed, he said stop, let's rewind, and they go to the exact frame, and he says, you know, who put that in and why? And the guy says, well, I put it in just to see, just for you to see that if you would actually pick it out. And Walt Disney said, I saw it and you're fired. And then the other story is that after he stopped it, he said something to the effect of, you know, who did this and why? And they told the same story and he just blew it off and made the comment of, if she'd had clothes on, I wouldn't have noticed her. So I don't know if the story is true, but perhaps that's maybe it's that same naked woman.
Yeah, no, maybe he just decided not to take it out. He just kept it in there. But yeah, absolutely. It seems from the research I did do, and again, on this book, The 13 Illuminati Bloodlines, there's actually an entire chapter on Walt Disney, and it's actually the one that's somewhere in the range of about 60 or 70 pages. It's really a fantastic read. There are portions that are very dry and very bland. But what you just said, both scenarios actually fit with what I've read about who Walt Disney truly was. The man was kind of an egotistical maniac at some times, and he even demanded that men, both that worked at Disneyland and those who drew for his company, were to never have mustaches or facial hair, which is very strange because he had facial hair. So I think he just, you know, weird things like that are Walt Disney in a nutshell. A couple more movies I'd like to bring up. There is, the movie Fantasia. Fantasia was one of the first Disney movies that really had a good audience for it. What's really strange about Fantasia is, first of all, it's terribly, terribly boring. It's a really, really dull movie. And there's very little dialogue. It's basically you just sitting there watching all these visuals and things lighting up. There is, at one point in the movie, there's two scenes that I do question. There are flames emitting from a cauldron at one point, and the flames do turn into dancing women. It's not just a silhouette of a woman. You can make out that it's definitely a woman dancing. Again, this is a cartoon. This is not an actual woman dancing, but it's very noticeable. And then there's also a scene about 10 seconds later in the movie where there are women who are topless, and they do resemble the demons, and they're flying throughout the air. Now, again, there's weird stuff in movies regularly, but what's interesting about Disney is he aimed these movies at young children. So for something like that to be in this movie really does not make sense. And again, it could have been just, disgruntled employee or somebody playing a joke on him or anything, but the fact that a lot of these things are still in the movies to this day after all the, transferring it from VHS to DVD, Blu-ray, all these things, the fact that most of these things are still in the movie is very strange. There's also, in The Lion King, there's a scene with where Simba, who is the main star of The Lion King, he lies down exhausted, and some dust flies in the air, and the dust actually spreads out in the sky into the form of the word sex. It's pretty obvious that it's the word sex. You don't just necessarily have to freeze frame it at the specific second. You can pretty much see that sex is being written in the sky.
I'd always heard that that one had been admitted, but they claimed that they were actually writing SFX for the special effects team.
Yeah, that's because that makes sense. Hey, if you want to admit to it, that's okay, but at least be friggin' truthful here. It's sex, not SFX. But hey, at least they admitted to a degree on that. We got the movie Alive. Have you seen this one?
I don't think I've seen Alive.
Okay, Alive is actually a true story about, I believe it's a soccer team. It could be a...
Oh, then and eating was involved.
Exactly.
I did actually see this film.
Yeah.
Long-ass time ago.
I know. I watched this in English class in high school. And what is really strange about this is it was billed, and I do have a quote here, as a triumph of the human spirit is what this movie was described as.
Hmm.
Now, that's very strange because this movie is not necessarily a family movie. It's not even a kids movie. The whole gist of the story is these people are stranded. There's been a plane crash. They do at one point have to resort to eating some of the people.
Cannibalism.
Yeah, cannibalism. So the fact that that is dealt with in a children's type movie or a movie that's under the Disney umbrella is it does pose a couple questions as to why that's there. There's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is one of the more well known questionable scenes where Jessica Rabbit is thrown from a car and if you actually slow down the actual scene itself, you can see that she's not wearing underwear at one point.
She flashes us.
Yeah, she flashes us. Now, very strange. Also, there is a scene where Donald Duck seemingly says to Daffy Duck, goddamn stupid, and then he uses the N-word, which I'm just not going to say. Something like that in a movie... it's pretty much...
In Roger Rabbit, or what movie was this?
This isn't in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Hmm.
Correct, yeah. So there's that. Hmm. There's a few other ones here. The Alice in Wonderland, there is a scene in Alice in Wonderland, not the most recent one, the cartoon from, the 60s or 70s, where Alice does seemingly sniff cocaine from a coffee cup.
She sniffs it from a coffee cup.
Cup. That's a big pile of cocaine she's got in front of her. And then we got in the movie Aladdin. Now I actually listened to this 3 or 4 times yesterday because I wanted to double check. But this is pretty accurate. There is a scene where the genie is heard mumbling the phrase, all good teenagers take off their clothes.
And where does he say this?
He says this. Now, actually, Brian, if you actually probably just write that and write Aladdin, you can find it on YouTube.
Okay.
I did give a lot of links to these things because I wanted to have some sort of, something for...
All good teenagers take off their clothes?
Correct.
Let's see what we can find here.
Yeah, you're going to see the tiger.
Huh,
the
first thing up. How about that?
Well, there you go.
All right, we're going to see if I can play this here with you on the air, so... Let's
okay.
give it a shot here. It's here we go. Aladdin is on the balcony, and the tiger comes out, and Aladdin says, "Good kitty, down boy." Then he says, "Good teenagers, take off your clothes." Here we go.
So how's our little Bo doing?
Oh, mouse.
Let's get it.
Come on, good teenagers, take off your clothes.
There it was. Should we play one more time?
I didn't even hear it. Sorry, man.
Let me try it one more time.
So how's our little Beau doing?
Oh, mouse.
Let's get it.
Come on, good teenagers, take off.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that one.
It was now it isn't a mumble. You need
it
to know kind
mumble,
of what
yes.
you're listening for, but yeah, absolutely. Like it's more or less a mumble. It's hard to decipher, but I mean, I listened to it 3 or 4 times yesterday, and I was able to pick it up.
If you know what you're listening for, you can hear it, yes.
Correct, exactly. Now, that's the thing, right, is if we're watching the movie itself, we're not looking for things like that. We're not listening for mumbles. We're not listening for certain sounds or anything like that. We're strictly watching the movie itself. So, again, yeah, a lot of this stuff, you don't notice it until you've been notified of it. And then, again, just because I say this stuff doesn't mean it's true. Research it yourself. If you don't see it for yourself, that's fine. That's you just don't see it. Another example here, I think I'm pretty much at the end of it. Oh, and actually, Pinocchio. The whole concept of Pinocchio is that, you know, Geppetto creates Pinocchio, and Pinocchio is born without a heart or a soul. And Geppetto says, maybe someday you can kind of have that heart and have that soul with time and with love or whatever they want to say, which when you actually think about it, it kind of does tie to Freemasonry because they sort of believe that we're all born without a soul as well, and that we come to get a soul with research or with whatever it is that we're doing. As for that, those are like the great examples.
Actually, I'll tell a quick Pinocchio story right here that has nothing to do with anything, but I remembered it when you mentioned that. When I was a kid at my school, we did the play Pinocchio, and my this guy named Jeff Holteen was Pinocchio, and my buddy Mike Karch did not like Jeff Holteen, and Mike was a really weird guy. You know, he was always talking about I shouldn't say since I use his real name, but regardless, Jeff Holteen was annoying Mike Karch, and so Mike finally snapped and he said, "Jeff, if you don't shut up, I'm going to burn you." And Jeff said, "You can't burn me. I'm a real boy now." And Mike said, "You're still flammable." And I'll never forget that as long as I live, that he was going to burn. He was going to burn Pinocchio in real life. Anyway, before we go today, I wanted you to get a chance to tell the story. Apparently you saw a ghost.
Yeah, man. This is very strange. Now, I have told people about this. I have been looked at as a nut job, but you kind of saw the description I gave you there. But long story short, I have a bedroom in a basement. I have a bed, and to the right a little bit, I guess if my head is at the bed at 12 o'clock, I guess the TV would be at around 7 or 8 o'clock, best way I could describe it. So I always turn off all the lights. I tend to fall asleep while there's a movie on, or I'm watching TV. That's how I sleep. I always wake up the next morning. It's on SportsCenter or whatever, and I'm good to go. So this night, I was just lying there sleeping, and I awoke. And I was sleeping on my back, which was a little strange because I don't normally sleep on my back when I awoke. And I looked at the TV because that's where the light was emitting from, and was unable to make out my whole entire TV. Now, there's probably no more than 10 feet between my TV and my bed. And something was standing in the direction of my TV. What I could make out from it is that the body was turned at an angle, so it was showing me the side complexion. and I could see the black silhouette, and it seemed like whatever it was literally had a rectangular-shaped box over its head. Now, I know that seems very strange. It doesn't make much sense to me.
It had a box over its head? Or
yeah,
its
okay, because it was the silhouette of it, I wasn't able to make out any specific things. I could only see the shape of everything, right? And all I could see is this very strange, misshaped type head.
So it could have it could have just had a square head.
It could. You very well could be right there. So that's a strong possibility. Now, what makes this really interesting is that I couldn't move. I was completely paralyzed. I had fully functioning brain. I was aware that something was standing in front of me. I was aware this was a situation I'd never been in before, and I was legitimately scared. But I couldn't do anything. I couldn't move. I couldn't say anything. Like, nothing would come out. I just froze looking there. And there was no movement from whatever it was, no anything. It just stayed standing still. So finally, and I'd probably say that this was probably a good, a minute and a half to 2 or 3 minutes of me sitting there just looking at this thing and trying to figure out what the hell was going on with me because I can't move. I sat directly up with no control. I didn't plan on sitting directly up. Believe me, I would have just yelled or something. I was actually, frozen. I was really nervous. It's a situation I've never been in before. And basically sat up directly up, and out of my mouth came something along the lines of, Jesus Christ commands you out of this boy. Now, again, like I said, this was very strange because, I'm not some born-again Christian. I do believe in God, but I'm not completely there yet. For me to say something like that, I wouldn't have said something like that in a million years. There would have been a billion other things I would have said as opposed to something like that. But it was said, and again, it was interesting too because I'm a 26-year-old man, and the fact that the word boy came out of my mouth was very strange. Now, when I said it, I immediately laid back down on my back without my control. I had no control over lying back down. My eyes were shut, and I woke up the next morning. Now, when I woke up the next morning, if things were light out, I could make out things in the room because it was 7 or 8 o'clock, like the sun was shining, blah, 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 and my TV was off. Now, again, this whole story sounds very strange because I've always been into ghosts. I've always been interested in the paranormal and things like that. I've never, ever seen anything other than seeing this thing. And this was about a year and a half ago. And I don't know what to make about it, man. All I know is that I saw what I saw. I was legitimately frozen. I slept with a light on in this basement for a good, 2 to 3 months afterwards. And whatever it was, I know it was real because the TV was off, and I know what I felt in my heart and how scared I was. I just find it to be a very interesting but very strange story in general.
Well, before you came on, I was talking about ghosts with Carl and expressed a fair deal of skepticism, but I can now safely tell you I shall never sleep alone again for the rest of my life.
Man, like I said, I was legitimately afraid for my life, man. Well, what makes it even worse is that, you know what, talking to somebody about stuff like that, people just look at you like you're a whack job anyways. I mean, once I tell stories about the whatever it was had a box in its head, I see the rolling of the eyes, and no one believes the story. But I know, like I said, what happened. I know that since then, every night I've fallen asleep with the TV on, and every night I've woken up with the TV on. So I know what I felt I saw, and I'm confident it was real, or to a degree it was real. It could have been, you mentioned on your last show, DMT. I don't know very much about DMT, but I do know that there is some sort of, does have something to do with a conscious waking dream, and it could have been something along the lines of that, but I definitely did not do any hallucinogens or anything like that evening.
Well, when my wife did ayahuasca, she saw the rabbit man, who was a fellow with no head, but he had two giant rabbit ears coming out from where his head should be. And suffice to say, that was disconcerting. So people see weird stuff.
Yeah, and it seems like a fair amount of us see the same sort of things. We're having different psychological experiences, but seeing very similar things.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you very much for doing the show today. It was a hell of a show, and hopefully at some point we can have you back on. And any plugs you'd like to get out, whether it be for you or where people can go for more information?
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, I'm just going to list a couple books I got some of my research from. There were a couple books, The Brotherhood by Stephen Knight. It's a really well-done book on Freemasonry. Another book called 10,000 Famous Freemasons by William R. Denslow and Harry S. Truman. And there are some videos on the Internet if you want to take a look at some of this. Illuminati Killed Michael Jackson gives you an entry into what the Illuminati is. Demons Behind the Music Industry by John Todd. That's another video I would highly recommend. Can I make a quick plug for my MMA show?
Yeah, sure.
All right, man. I write a column for Club WWI every couple weeks. So Club WWI, that would be a shout-out for them. And the Apex Wrestling Show and the Apex MMA Show, both on Blog Talk Radio, Tuesday night at 9 and Wednesday night at 9. And I guess I just want to thank you, Brian, for having me here, man. You didn't make me feel like a total whack job, which is really nice. And I'd love to come back if you want to have me.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on, and thanks again. We'll do it again someday, and I'm sure we will cover these topics in depth in future shows as well. And it was a lot of fun. So thanks again, and of course, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, Carl, as always. We shall talk to you next week. Have a good evening.